This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
All right, welcome in. Good Sunday morning to you. John Dickinson joined by Kyle Madsen. 888-957-9570. That is the phone number to participate in the program. Good to be live and local once again here as we head on into the summer. We're going to be with you for the next 4 hours, all the way up until 2 o'clock, talking about everything that's going on in the world of sports. Kyle, we started the show last Sunday, and really both shows last weekend. I was concerned. There was optimism waning in terms of the return of sports. I think although the number of coronavirus cases is rising throughout the country, it feels like we're in a very different place as far as sports, however, than we were a week ago. A lot more optimism and resolve to push forward and at least try by the NBA and Major League Baseball.
I had an epiphany last night, JD. I decided that because I'm with you there. It felt last week like the leagues might start pulling back and hitting the brakes and changing dates around, but they're not. They're just rolling forward. And while I have concern for the athletes, the leagues obviously think they have this covered and figured out. So I am just going to sit back and enjoy the fact that there will be sports back. I can have my own personal concerns, but if the leagues are going to play games and the athletes are going to participate, I'm not going to fret about it. I have enough to worry about in my own life. I have enough to worry about with the virus and with my family. I'm just going to enjoy the fact that there's going to be basketball on in late July. I'm going to enjoy the fact that baseball is going to be back on July 1, and I'm not going to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, I think the best course of action is to understand that while both leagues continue to push forward, it's not a guarantee, but I think the way to proceed is just by saying, assuming that now that there are official dates in the NBA's case, I mean, they released a schedule for the seeding games that are going to be played in Orlando beginning on July the 30th, Major League Baseball is going to release a schedule at some point here in the next 3 days, which is going to have games from the 23rd of July all the way to September the 27th. Now that the dates are on the calendar, and you can even throw the NFL in there within the last couple of days, they have said, hey, July 28th is training camps are on, and they're going to begin as scheduled. Maybe some preseason games get tossed away or thrown out completely. But there are dates on the calendar. So I think the best way to proceed, and just sort of the overhanging view as we continue to get into these other issues, Kyle, is just it's assume that sports are going to happen because the dates are on the calendar. And if it winds up not happening, then we'll deal with that as the time comes. But I thought, especially in the case of Adam Silver, on Friday, when he was on a conference call with the media, he was as steadfast and strong and saying, we're going to do this and we're going to make it as safe as possible. I never thought I would ever hear Adam Silver be that adamant at the NBA's willingness to push forward and try, but yet here we are.
One of the things that concerns me a little bit is I think it's good Silver's saying, you know, we're going to push forward and we're going to learn to live with this and da-da-da-da-da. I know we talked about this a while back, but it didn't really hit me until I saw the schedule. Why are the Wizards there? Why are the Suns there? Like, the Suns and Wizards play on July 31st. I wouldn't have interest in that game ever. Why are they in Orlando? Why are they adding additional bodies and making this more difficult than it needs to be?
Well, I mean, I have a theory on it.
Okay.
And I mean, and the Suns, if you look at their schedule, and it's so funny because I haven't done the full, you know, John Dickinson deep dive.
So you don't have it memorized yet?
But we were talking about it yesterday when the great Nash Solomon was with me. And, you know, I noticed some things just by giving it a quick glance and kind of going team by team. And
sure.
And one of the things I noticed just as it pertains to the Suns don't play anybody that's fighting for a playoff spot other than the Wizards in that first game. So like they don't play one single game against the Pelicans or the Spurs or the Blazers or the Kings or the Grizzlies. Not one. So when you make the claim that Jeez. They don't, so they would essentially, to have a shot, would have to go 8-0, and even that might not give them a shot because they're farther back than that other glut of teams. But they don't play any of the teams that they're chasing, so they've got no shot. And
that's even more pointless.
to that point, I mean, that was something when you bring those two teams up specifically, there's zero reason.
Right.
For those two teams to be there. Phoenix especially, I think for Washington, it became a matter of if you're going to have this format where
right.
you're going to say that you have an 8 and a 9, and if the 9 is within 4 games of the 8, then you're going to have this goofy play-in where the 9 has to beat the 8 twice and the 8 only has to beat the 9 once.
Right.
If you're going to do that, it makes some sense in the Western Conference because you've got a clear-cut 8 seed, and then you've basically got 4 teams that are tied for 9th right now that are all right on the cusp of being 4 games back. So it makes sense in the West, but if you're doing it for the West,
you have to do
you almost have to do it for the East.
Right.
So in essence, you make it where you have Memphis and Portland and Sacramento and the Pelicans and the Spurs fighting for one spot in the West. Well, who's fighting for anything in the East
right.
if you don't bring any other teams besides the 8 that were, you know, that were already in the mix? So Washington gets to go just to put a little bit of pressure on Orlando and Brooklyn to actually have to play. So I'm with you 100%, although I do give Adam Silver credit because, you know, if you view the way the coverage surrounding COVID-19 has again ramped up here over the course of the last few days, and where the NBA stance has been on it, you know, ultimately extremely cautious. I was really surprised when I saw two quotes. No option is risk-free right now. The
yeah.
challenge before us as a society and as an industry is to find a safe way to operate. And then the other quote, we can't sit on the sidelines indefinitely. We must adapt. We believe it will be safer on our campus than off it. But this is not business as usual.
Yeah, I get it. And I admire what he's trying to do. The we can't sit on the sideline. We need to learn to adapt is a little concerning because of like Rudy Gobert just came out and said that he's not fully recovered yet from COVID. He said he just got his taste back, but he can't quite smell yet, or the other way around. And that's where I'm trying to put that uneasiness aside because players can opt out if they want. But that's the thing that concerns me a little when you talk about that quote standing out. That's what stands out. That's the reason that stands out for me, is like the fact of the matter is it's basketball. It can stay on the sideline until you're not putting your player's health at risk. You know, this is not an essential service or something like that. But I'm not mad at it. I'm going to enjoy the fact that there's going to be basketball on TV on Thursday, July 30th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, and honestly, if there is you know, really a concern, you know, for Adam Silver as far as, you know, whether or not the NBA can actually get to a point where they can attempt to pull this off, it's the fact that they still have a month to go before they're actually going to be playing games. You know, if anything, and I said this yesterday, you know, and look, I was a proponent that they needed to move a little bit quicker, and not that they needed to act recklessly or do anything any different than the plan that they've come up with, other than try to have that plan in place to where it could have been implemented a little bit sooner. Yeah. And the only reason I say that is because I think the NBA would be in a more confident place, you know, given everything that's going on in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and the spike in cases and all of that. I think the NBA would feel better if they were already there and had been there for, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks,
right,
and all of the testing, you know, that happened a week ago happened a month ago. And you know, they were already at a point where everybody had entered the campus environment and they had, you know, a handful. And I mean, you know, let's say 5 or fewer tests, right? Because the belief is as they actually get closer and as they get on the campus, once they get on the campus, the goal is to have almost none or zero positive tests. So, like, I feel like if they were already there into that point, there would be less concern, at least from their standpoint, about trying to pull it off, about what is going on in the outside world around them.
Mm-hmm.
But now, because they have yet to enter that, you know, things could get worse. And I feel like the pressure to whether or not it's even worth doing it from the outside is something that Adam Silver and the league is going to have to deal with from a public relations standpoint, frankly. And I think that's what stood out to me,
yeah,
when I looked at those two quotes, because I felt like the coverage and the shift and like that pressure to maybe not do it, or like you said, pull back or change some dates, I feel like that pressure was really, really starting to hit on Friday. But yet Friday's the day it was, we're moving forward, we can't stay on the sidelines, we have to figure out a way to do this if we're going to try to do it. Here's the schedule, everybody.
Right. And that's I guess if they had been able to, I think it's the uncertainty. That's the word I was just looking for and I couldn't find it. If they had been able to eliminate some of the uncertainty, I think we'd be looking at this differently. But that's the whole issue, is we don't know exactly how this is going to go. And at some point, the NBA knew they were bringing this season back at some point, and they finally, it's like finding out when to dive into the pool. Like, you know it's going to be cold, you know it's not going to be awesome at first, but everything should be fine, and worst case, you get out of the pool if it's not okay to swim. I know that's a kind of convoluted analogy, but it's what I feel like the NBA is doing. Like, they've been standing on the side of the pool waiting, and they've finally just gone, okay, we're jumping in, and if it doesn't work, fine, but they have to do something, and the uncertainty is the larger issue right now, and you don't have any certainty until you do it. I know that was a super convoluted way to get where I wanted to go, but I got there.
No, I think you did get there. And look, I wanted to spend a little time at the beginning of the program, as I typically like to do, you know, in each of these shows that we've done, to just kind of assess, you know, where we're at. And look, we are in a place that's closer in theory, to a return to sports than we were a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the commissioner of the sport that has been the most cautious about making sure that everybody involved with his league is safe, you know, really came out, I think, as strongly as he has at any point a couple of days ago in saying, hey, we intend to move forward. And, you know, I think it's worth talking about that for a few minutes, just, you know, based on the fact that now that the games are on the calendar, we can kind of shift the conversation that way.
Right.
Now that the games are on the calendar, and the games are going to be on the calendar in baseball, and the games are already on the calendar in football, although they're farther down the line, but training camp is going to be starting right in line with that same. I mean, it's all going to start within 5 days of each other, within a week of each other.
Yeah.
All three of the major sports are going to start. At least that's the plan. So, you know, I think we have to, at least for the purposes of, you know, sports talk radio and having conversations about it, acknowledge it, but then push forward with what is on the table. And right now, what's on the table is we got it. We got NBA games to look forward to. And by the way, it looks like a viewer's dream,
dude.
When you look at, you know, between 5 and 8 games a day and 4 or sometimes 5 games on national television, depending upon the day.
I have that Saturday, August 1st circled. Clear my calendar. I am waking up and I'm sitting on my couch and there's basketball on ESPN from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. That's what I'm doing all day.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, I was curious, you know, being a self-proclaimed schedule nerd, as everybody knows here, I was curious how they were going to go about doing it. They took all of the games for the most part that were the next games up for all of these teams, but they didn't put them in that order. They just took those games with a couple of exceptions, and then they came up with their own basically pool of games, and then they arranged them however they wanted to arrange them once they got to that pool of games, which I think is smart. You know, when the league had initially said they were going to start on Friday, the 31st of July, and then a couple of days later, they said, no, it's going to be the 30th. My thought was, well, they're going to go with the traditional, you know, Thursday night, TNT doubleheader. Those are the only two exclusive games on, and then Wouldn't you know, the schedule comes out, and that's exactly why they're starting on the 30th and not the 31st, because you've got Utah and the Pelicans, and then the Clippers and the Lakers going at it. It really is, when you look at it, it's a viewer's dream, and if you're looking for incentives, you know, to get people to continue to stay in as much as possible. I mean, I really do think having these wall-to-wall games basically from 10 or 11 or noon every day for 2.5 weeks until, you know, 8:30, 9, 10 o'clock here on the West Coast, that goes a long way.
And I think that's the epiphany I had after the schedule came out, because for all the worrying and hand-wringing I've been doing, as soon as you showed me games with times and channels, I'm in. I'm watching. I'm watching it, and I'm going to be invested, and then I'm going to do my job where we talk about it, and the level of optimism that I had after the schedule came out was like I don't know if it was a rise in optimism or just a shift in thought process, but like I said at the top of the show, my worry about everything going on kind of got pushed to a different burner when it was digesting a schedule and starting to think about games again and getting back to a more normal sports talk environment. I'm viewing this just through the prism of my job, of course.
Sure. Well, again, and that's okay, honestly. I mean, again, you know, our job in large part is we're going to talk about what is out there. Mm-hmm. And you know what? And I'll just say it again. I mean, there's no guarantee that any of these games get played. There's, you know, Major League Baseball is going to put a schedule out, and there's no guarantee that any of those games are going to get played. And, you know, the NFL may have to rearrange some things. Mm-hmm. All of that is on the table at this point. But as long as the leagues themselves are deciding that they're going to move forward, you know, each show and each person can have their own individual take on how they want to cover it or discuss it. I mean, I don't have an issue with that. But, you know, for me personally, it's more about, all right, let's lay out where we are, and the games are on the schedule, so we're going to talk about the games, you know, yep, as we would be talking about the games if they were going to be played under normal circumstances.
Yeah, you have to. I'm really excited. Like, Utah-New Orleans, that's a game that I would have planned a day around or planned my evening around before all this. And now it's going to be like that first game, that first real basketball game back, and there's playoff implications, and it's just, I don't know if it'll be like riding a bike because the viewing experience is going to be so different, but I think from a game digestion standpoint and then talking about it the next day, it's going to be like riding a bike. And I can't wait. I want to watch Zion Williamson play basketball again.
I'm curious how Warriors fans view the NBA return because, you know, the Warriors have been at the forefront, a major headliner of anything and everything NBA for really the last 6 years. Like, they, like anything big in the NBA, it was highlighted by the Warriors, whether it was them, you know, winning a championship or 73-9 or signing Kevin Durant or, yep, you know, getting to the finals and losing a 3-1 lead, you know, or ultimately, you know, crumbling in terms of, you know, having players be, you know, in, you're just going down like flies, injured, you know, in last year's finals to where they ultimately lose to Toronto and Kevin Durant leaves. The Warriors have been at the forefront of everything major regarding the NBA for half a decade and a little bit longer. And I'm really curious how Warriors fans are thinking about, you know, there's going to be these 3 months of basketball scheduled to be played, or 2.5, I guess, and the Warriors aren't going to have anything to do with it other than the one night where they get told where they're going to pick in the NBA draft in late August.
We talked about this a little bit on Bonte, Steiny, and Guru back when it was apparent the Warriors weren't going to go to the postseason, but I'm kind of excited to watch a postseason sans Warriors anxiety. I like, as a Warriors fan, the last 5 years, five, six, 7 years, the postseason has always come with this air of like that like excitement, anxiousness. Even non-Warriors games, there's implications and who are they going to play and this and that. I'm excited to just watch playoff basketball and just kind of enjoy it. Like, I'd rather the Warriors be in it for sure. That's not a question. But I'm excited for it to kind of just take a year off. I think they're going to be competitive again next year. But this year, and it's, I'm just excited for enjoying basketball.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, if there was ever the year for the Warriors to not be in it, I mean, obviously their record, man, wouldn't put them in it anyway. But I mean, I really do think, you know, especially for them being really the only one of the eight teams that's not in it that believes they're going to be good and like has reason to believe they're going to be good next year. Like, if you're that team, like if you're the one team that's not going that thinks, hey, we're going to be really good next year or have the potential to be there, there's almost no point in even messing with it.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
right,
it just, and I get, and I understand, you know, that was kind of the Warrior stance. I know some people had reported it. I mean, I had obviously heard it. I mean, you know, the Warriors would have gone, but they didn't want to go. I mean, like, and why would they? And I understand, you know, that level of thinking. But I'm interested, you know, and I want to relate it to baseball too at some point, because I think it could be a weird spot for us locally. And I think there's a conversation there because I'm curious you know, are Warriors fans going to watch the NBA and root against LeBron or James Harden or root for something to happen with the Bucks that leads to Giannis or just enjoy it because they love basketball, you know, like we do? Or, you know, is the Bay Area going to be more inclined to maybe watch their baseball team? Because those two teams, at least at the beginning, are going to have a shot. And right. maybe at the end they're going to have a shot just because everybody's kind of going to have a shot.
Yeah.
So I wonder, you know, do Warrior fans just take the NBA, you know, playoffs and just kind of watch it fatically while they're watching baseball? Or are they still going to be all in on the NBA?
Yeah, that's interesting because I'm an A's fan. And I think the A's are going to be really good. But if it's game, I don't know how the dates line up, but if the A's are playing a random regular season game where there's not a ton on the line and there's an NBA playoff game on, I'm probably watching the NBA playoff game. Probably. I think it depends on who's playing.
Yeah, and what level, right? And
right.
like, what are we in the conference finals? Are we in the
right.
finals? You know, where? I mean, obviously the final. I mean, that's the other aspect of this. The baseball playoffs are going to be going on at the same time that the NBA finals are going to be going on. I mean, that assuming we get to October.
If it's an A's playoff game, I'm watching that. It could be Game 7 of the finals. I'm watching the A's.
All right.
Or I imagine a Giants fan would do the same.
He's Kyle Madsen.
Sometimes.
I'm John Dickinson. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. We'll get into that. And there's one element of the NBA return that I am very concerned about. There's a watchability factor that I think is awesome in terms of the schedule and the layout, and there's going to be games everywhere. But there is one major concern that I have for the 8 seeding games. I'll tell you what that is. We'll get into it next here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson and Kyle Madsen, we're with you until 2 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game, keeping it live and local, 888-957-9570. That's the phone number to participate in the program. You can give us a call. You can also shoot us a text at that very same number, 888-957-9570. We're talking about the return of sports as it is finally on the schedule with some firm dates as far as the NBA. The Major League Baseball is going to announce their schedule at some point here in the next couple of days. And, you know, I think there's levels to, Kyle, you know, if you're a Warriors fan, how do you consume the NBA bubble, right? And if you're a local baseball fan, how do you consume that? How do you balance your, you know, are you going to watch the Giants or the A's? Are you going to watch, you know, the NBA in some of these seeding games? I want to ask you about the different levels here. In just a second, because you said, you know, if it's a playoff game, which I think this is an obvious point, like if you're an A's fan, if the A's are in the playoffs and you're watching the A's playoff game
yes.
over really any NBA playoff game, right?
Yeah, the rest of my life stops if the A's are in a playoff game.
And
yes.
I think that's price of admission, right? Like, I think that's
yeah.
pretty basic and legitimate. For everybody. I'm also going to give you the biggest concern that I have as far as the NBA, which, you know, they laid out a schedule that just, you know, your jaw dropped in terms of, wow, we're going to be able to watch all these games for 2 weeks,
yeah.
basically nonstop. I mean, it almost felt like, you know, 16 NFL Sundays, the NBA version of 16 NFL Sundays, like back to back to back to back to back.
Yeah. It's definitely that vibe.
Or, you know, the NCAA tournament, you know, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., like we have it out here on the West Coast, only for 15, 16 consecutive days, right? I mean, it has the ability to be, I think, a viewer's paradise. But there is one concern I have, which I'll tell you about here coming up in just a minute. Here's what I wanted to kick back to you, though. We talk about playoffs versus playoffs. And because, look, we're in this scenario where the NBA and Major League Baseball, they're going to be playing at the same time. What about, and this kind of relates back to my concern for the NBA, what about the early Major League Baseball season games versus the seeding games and the early level of the NBA playoffs, play-in tournament, first round of the playoffs? And the reason I think the reason I bring that up is because of this. Even if you're a Giants fan and you think the Giants are going to be god awful, which they certainly project to be, you still have to probably play 20 games before you're truly god awful. And even then you could be god awful, but your record doesn't say you're necessarily god awful, and you may even hang in the race. So I guess that the question is, even for the fan of a bad baseball team, are you more apt to watch, let's say, the first 20 games of the Giants season, if you're a big Giants fan, than, you know, the seeding games that, or the early round of the playoffs that don't involve the Warriors at all?
I think for me, it depends a little. Like it depends on what playoff game is on. I'll watch an early MLB season game, especially this truncated season where, you know, a bad team goes 35-25 over 60 games and winds up in the playoffs. But I'll watch an early season game over Bucks Magic. I think the Bucks sweep that series or win it in five or whatever. I'm just not interested in that. Now, if you're looking at like Raptor Sixers or something, now I'm more interested. And that's something I might watch over an early season baseball game.
I think it's going to be fascinating, the ratings battle.
Yes.
And look, and on a national scale, you can say, all right, the NBA is probably going to crush. But what I'm interested in is the local scale. And, you know, because, you know, baseball does better locally, obviously, in terms of, you know, ratings and places where there's huge fan bases. I'm curious, though, to see, I mean, do you think there's any way, you know, and part of it is, you know, ESPN. I mean, ESPN's got to deal with Major League Baseball. ESPN's got to deal with the NBA. So I think they're going to try to keep, you know, those products, obviously, away from each other as much as possible, although there will be some overlap. But I'm curious in individual baseball markets and markets where there are, you know, two teams, or markets where there's a team like in the Bay Area, you got two teams that are going to be playing baseball without a team that's going to be playing in, you know, the NBA. I'm curious if this could actually still be a rare situation where baseball could go up with and against the NBA and maybe come out on top. I don't think it's possible, but what do you think?
I don't think it does nationally, but I think here, like, in the Bay Area, the fan bases are so dedicated, and we've gotten pretty lucky with how the years have kind of shaken out, where with the exception of 2016, where kind of everybody was all in the postseason, there hasn't been a real pull between all the teams being good at one time. And so I think what we're going to see locally is a lot of people who had been following the Warriors through their deep playoff runs while the Giants kind of floundered in obscurity the last couple of years are going to now shift back to the Giants because the Warriors aren't in it and they're huge Giants fans. And I think they're going to dive right back into that, especially with the optimism that a 60-game season brings. Like, now all of a sudden, everybody is a contender right off the bat. And I think that this delay has helped kind of tamper down on some of the pessimism surrounding the Giants. It just felt like the Giants took a lot of losses this offseason. And now I think that a lot of that has gone away, and people are just going to be excited to see the orange and black back on the field, that they're going to throw their support back behind the Giants. And I think that'll stay until they're officially out of it, which I think they will be at some point. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team, but I imagine those Giants fans are going to go right back to being diehard Giants fans. I don't know for the A's. I don't think the A's will contend with the NBA regardless, just based on what we've seen from that fan base and kind of the viewership numbers.
Yeah. I mean, the A's, it's unfortunate, but the A's could be, you know, a 45-15 team,
yeah,
and the Giants could be a 15-45 team, and it'll be at least probably 4-1, you know, in terms of,
yeah,
Giants.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality.
Yeah. So I think locally it wouldn't surprise me if Giants games do better than NBA games, but nationally, I think the baseball missed the boat on owning the summer. I really do.
They absolutely did. They absolutely did. And yeah, I mean, I keep going back to March, and obviously, yep, you know, in March when they came up with that agreement, the initial agreement that gave, you know, Rob Manfred the ability to set the schedule, which, you know, ultimately is what has happened here. But I go back to, you know, them saying at that point that they believed they could be playing games in May, which, you know, I think the narrative shifted as we learned more, obviously, about the virus. But I think where the narrative really shifted in terms of their willingness to do that was when it became apparent that they were going to have to do it without fans in the stands. Like, that was, like, there was the belief, I think, you know, a few weeks after that point, that maybe the May aspect of it was doable, but the entire season was going to have to be doable without fans. And I think that's when the owners went, wait a minute, no fans? Well, then we can't have 120 games or 110 games. Where initially, I think the players thought, hey, this is going to be great. You know, we're still going to get 75-80% of our salary regardless. And then the owners were like, wait a minute, no, we can't do that. And then it wound up being this, you know, month and a half long stalemate, which led nowhere and ultimately to 37% of a season being played starting on July 23rd.
That's what's wild about the fact the NFL is just kind of plowing forward like they're going to have fans there. Like, they're talking about tarping off the first 6 to 8 rows, but they're only tarping off the first 6 to 8 rows because they want seats available for people. I know the NFL doesn't start till September, but after seeing what happened with baseball in that respect, do you think they'd maybe,
yeah,
plan the other direction?
Well, I look, nobody knows, and I this, it may be foolish for me to even say this, but I will put it out there. I mean, I don't see how the NFL is going to be able to have fans. They are, but it's going to have to be, I mean, I think it's going to have to be 25% capacity if it's allowed at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I mean, like, you know, one person for every 4 seats, let's say, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
In terms of just, you know, that I get to the 25%, and then I obviously am being redundant, but just for the mental image, it's 1 person, 3 empty seats, 1 person. Like, that's how I get to, you know, the obvious,
right,
you know, 25% number. And I just don't, I think that's a battle that the NFL thought they could win even a month ago. But I'm not sure that that's a battle that they're going to be able to win, given what we're seeing in Florida and Texas and Arizona.
That's the kind of football is the one that got, I don't want to say the benefit, but football is the only one that hasn't had their schedule completely thrown off by COVID yet. And so that's one of the key things with how the NBA season works, how the baseball season works. I think that's going to color a lot how the NFL decides to operate its regular season. Because I don't know if they are going to be able to start training camps on time. Like, the Niners facility isn't even open yet. Like, Santa Clara, the county, is not letting the facility be open. and they're supposed to have 90 players there in a month. I don't see it. But I'm wondering if the NFL is going to be taking any kind of notes on how the NBA and MLB seasons go to see if that shapes how they do their season.
Yeah, I think they will, although really it comes down to it, and I don't want to totally go down the road of, you know, getting into the logistics of managing, you know, the pandemic, but mm-hmm. I mean, Frank, but it does come down, I think, to, you know, it comes down to testing. I mean, it comes down to, like, and we've talked about this, I think, a little bit, you know, sports teams have been granted little exemptions here or there. And I'm not speaking of testing, although they have been had access to that. I'm just saying in terms of, you know, the Blue Jays are probably going to be allowed to play games in their park. The Blue Jays are going to be allowed to come to the United States and go back, whereas you or I could not do that. Or a normal citizen of Toronto could not do that. Like,
right.
Like those little exceptions. And the reason that was brought to mind was, you know, what you said about the 49ers facility. At some point, the 49ers here in the next month, in my view, they're going to have to get an exemption.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think they will, because for them to operate, they're going to have it. I kind of look at that as just almost a formality, but I bring it back to what you said about, hey, 90 guys are going to have to be there a month from today, literally, mm-hmm. July 28th.
Right.
And that's where it comes back to, you know, when you start speaking about, you know, how's the NFL going to follow what the other leagues have done? It's testing. It's 90 guys have to come in. And what I do think is going to happen in the NFL is they're going to wipe out preseason games. I think maybe completely, which would be, or maybe you have one, but I think it, and what you're going to do is you're going to use the normal time that would be in play where teams would travel to preseason games and have a day off after and all of that stuff, have the travel day before, and then all of the normal, like, basically 3 days that it takes to play one NFL game when you mm-hmm. when you factor in the logistics of it.
Right.
I think you're going to use that time that you gain by not having any preseason games as added leeway from where you start in terms of holding a training camp, but also holding a training camp where everybody comes in on July 28th and you may have, you know, a 20% of your team test positive and need to go into an immediate quarantine. So you're in essence offsetting some of the time that you're going to lose by, you know, losing players, but the goal remains the same in the NFL as it does in baseball and in the NBA, which is by the time you actually get to playing games, you want to have zero positives and then try and keep that number as low as humanly possible as you continue to go. So it's get the 90 in, get everybody in on the same day, get everybody tested, weed out the positives, they go into a quarantine, begin to hold your training camp, you know, somewhat as normal, but more spaced out because you would have more days to have a training camp if you don't actually factor in the games. And that's how you, to me, make up for the timing losses of players that inevitably are going to test positive and need time to recover before they can join the full, you know, 90-man pool again.
Smart coaches are going to, and I don't mean to make this like shift gears to the NFL here, but smart coaches are going to be at such a massive advantage because you might have a scenario where training camp, let's say they wipe out all four preseason games and just make training camp that 4 weeks. If you're missing your starting quarterback for 2 weeks because he's in quarantine, that makes your offseason very difficult. Because now you don't have your starting quarterback to install your offense for 2 weeks. Or make that two starting offensive linemen. Or maybe you have a rookie wide receiver. The Niners have Brandon Ayuk. Maybe you have a rookie wide receiver who can't practice for 2 weeks. Like that's a huge loss. And it's going to take some real creativity from coaches to mitigate the effects of that. And I think we're going to find out this year, assuming everything goes kind of as you just laid out and everything goes smoothly, we're going to have some scenarios where teams are going to have to be without key players for 2 weeks plus at a time during the time of the year where it's very important to have those guys to prepare for the season. On top of having this truncated offseason where the teams haven't been able to get together for rookie minicamp, any sort of minicamp, any sort of OTAs, everything's been online, the good and bad coaches, I think, are really going to get weeded out from each other this season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the NFL is going to really have to, I mean, that's just going to become, you know, part of the injury report,
Yeah. Frankly.
I mean, I think that's the only way that, you know, I think that's the only way that you can attempt to, you know, try and move forward and do it as safely as possible. And I think, you know, look, if you take out, you know, the four preseason games, you're basically giving yourself 12 days extra.
Right.
You know, because of the day of the game, the day before and the day after the game. And you're making it where it's essentially 6 weeks from, it's 6 weeks that you have from the time you start training camp until when you need to start the regular season. And you're gaining, basically, you're trading four games, but you're gaining 12 days that can either be off days, they could be quarantine days for certain players,
Yeah. They
can be extra practice days to make up for quarantine days. Like, to me, if you just look at kind of the math of what they're dealing with, I think that's the most prudent way to maximize the time and ultimately, you know, keep everybody as safe as possible. The other part that I would be concerned about, and yeah, not to get, you know, off on an NFL tangent. And by the way, I had you credited me for a great tease, which I still have not paid off, about my biggest concern about the NBA startup. We may have to actually push that to the top of the hour. But the reality for me in the NFL is, you know, what always goes on at NFL practices and on the days of NFL? Group meetings,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Quarterback room, DB room, D-line room, O-line room. Like, you hear all of these things, and every time I've thought about all of those terms, I've thought, well, what you can't have is, you know, one of your quarterbacks give it to all your quarterbacks, or
Right. One
of your offensive linemen gives it to all eight or, you know, 12 in the case of the preseason offensive linemen. You know, those are the kinds of things that
going to need to be very spread out.
Really are going to have to be. I mean, that's where the NFL to me is going to have to, because look, once guys get tested and they're on the field, you can't really do much about social distancing. You just can't. So you have to make sure that you're not, you have to make sure that you're preventing spread before you get to the point where you're on the field.
Yeah, there's so many logistics that go into it that are going to be really tough to pull off. Like there's no other way to put it, because we're talking about a 90-man roster, a full coaching staff, you have a training staff, you have a nutrition staff, you have a strength staff, like there, and then you have a weight room that guys are working out in. It's going to be very, very difficult. But like I said, I'm putting all that stuff behind me, and I am just trusting that the NFL is going to have it figured out and they're going to be fine.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough, but go ahead.
It's doable.
It's
doable. I mean, that's the thing. Like that's the big thing for me, Kyle. It is doable.
Right.
Like
right.
We can have the debate, you know, should sports return? I'm kind of over the debate, sports return. And the reason I'm over the debate, should sports return, is because the leagues and the players are deciding that they're going to do it. And you know what? If at some point the players in the leagues decide that they're not going to do it for safety reasons,
then
that's fine. I'll respect that decision. And like you said earlier, it's non-essential. But if they are making the decision to do it, you know,
I'm not going to fight them.
I'm on board with it, and
yeah.
I'm not going to be the one wringing my hands saying they shouldn't do it. Just like I'm not going to be the person that's going to wring my hands and say somebody shouldn't, you know, go to their job. You know what I mean? You know, wherever it is, because of you know, the virus. I mean, there's people all over. I mean, that is true. I mean, there is people all over the world that, you know, are going to their job because they have to. And, right. you know, I think, you know, you go down that road and, you know, I think we have to just, we have to allow people to make their own decisions. There's people that aren't. Mm-hmm. And I respect that as well. You know, it's, we just have to be, it's kind of the common sense. We just have to, respect each other's views on this. And you know what, if it's deemed not safe, so be it. It's deemed not safe. Right. We'll move on. We'll deal with it. We'll roll with it. But if the players and the owners and the leagues want to do it and attempt to try, which all four of the major sports are going to try to do,
yep.
then I'm on board with it. And I'm not going to try to talk them out of it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I got as well. I don't, like I said, I have my thoughts and I have my personal how I'm going to deal with certain things. But sure. if sports are going to come back, then I'm not going to begrudge it. I'm not going to fight it. And if I was going to fight it, I think I'm probably doing the wrong job. You know, that's kind of where I landed.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. I will finally tell you what my biggest concern is for the NBA in their return.
I'm not talking until you pay off that tease next segment.
It is the first thing out as we continue here into hour number two. It's John Dickinson and Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.